I just wanted to avoid Mame being a place where Emi or Machi have to be there all the time, because cafe is open 7 days a week. We have 5 locations. We cannot be in 5 pieces. So every single cup brewed under the roof of Mame has to be as good as by me or by you or whatever.
Today's a special guest is Emi Fukuhori. When I first met her in person back to 2022 in Melbourne Coffee Events, she was standing on the corner, smiling and watching her trainees on the stage. On that year, her trainee, Alicia, won the 3rd place in World Barista Cup, and Takayuki won the 4th place in World Barista Championship. Besides that, her teammate Danile won the 2nd place in WBC 2023. Trainee Ryan Wibawa won the 3rd in WBRC in Chicago a couple weeks ago. From a world champion to a reputable coach, she is a unique icon in specialty coffee. We have so much curiosity on her coffee journey. So when we met her in Shanghai Hotel Lux in March, we can't wait to have a conversation with her.
So first of all, would you like to introduce to our audience who you are and your journey starts in specialty coffee, please?
Right. Well, thank you very much for having me. My name is Emi Fukuhori. I was born in Japan. I live in Switzerland. It's been 15 years. I call it home. In Zurich, I got to be in specialty coffee in 2014 as a coffee lover. So I was not working in the coffee back then, but I got hooked thanks to Barista Championships. I could join a cupping held at the roastery where Barista Champion of 2014 in Switzerland was training for the competition for Rimini. And then I entered the room and wondered what she was doing. And then she let me try her coffee for the first time. And then she described her cappuccino saying it tastes like strawberry. And I'm like, no, can't be. And then I tried and that was tasting like, yes, indeed, strawberry. That's how my coffee journey started, because I wanted to learn how to do the same. I came to Switzerland to study tourism. Before coffee, I was working in tourism, basically responsible for division where organizing tours for non-Swiss people coming to Switzerland. I studied in the Asian division, mainly Japanese and the Far East. Ended up doing ad hoc, like custom-made tours for Asian customers, and then ended up doing the same for the American customers. So nothing to do with coffee.
Right. So I'd say sometimes maybe the destiny is unpredictable. So did you realize you were getting to coffee, or it's just like very random?
That was super random. I think I was looking for a new hobby where I can dive into with new friends, something to do with flavors. Growing up in Japan, for me, with my parents, spending weekends in the area where it's far from my hometown, spend some time, eat specialty coffee, specialty food there, and coming back. That was something that I did a lot with my parents back in the days. And then being in Zurich, it was often quite difficult to find something new within the community 10 years ago. My friends at the time weren't necessarily into food and beverage. They just ate because they had to be fed, so to say. And that's why I thought, oh, I need new friends. And new activity. That was kind of like a first contact with something speciality. No, it was, it could have been wine, could have been tea. But in that moment, it was a specialty coffee.
Cool. So have you started working in specialty coffee before you start competition?
I actually started competition first. So back in 2014, I got fascinated by this barista championship that I didn't know before. And I spent half a year after work going to the roastery every single day. The roastery at that time was very kind to let me use that space. At some point, he handed over his key. Like, you do whatever you want. So I had a space to train. Great support from them. Coffee I could choose from. Of course, Ethiopian natural back in the days. And that was the coffee that I could call the strawberry, right, in a milk drink. So after half year, 2015, I competed in Barista Championships in Switzerland for the first time and I won. Out of a shock. It was Sasha, Sesic, competing. We competed together. It was my first year at the world. I was overwhelmed. I didn't understand what the world is about. And I was even more fascinated that that kind of world exists. People I met there, all the baristas, supporters, they're nuts. They're crazy about coffees. And I wanted to be one of them too. So 2016, I resigned my job and I became a proper barista.
Wow. Did you still remember your ranking in 2015?
I think I was 33 or something. Sasha and myself were the only one who couldn't start the timer properly. And since that, like after the year, I think you could just say time and then someone is pushing. That time in 15, I remember we had to push the button by ourselves. I mean, of course, my first time, right? I don't look at the time. I just say, I thought I pushed, didn't go. After espresso, I look at the timer. It says 00. My God. It's like, oh my God. Me and Sasha are the only ones that year. But then at some point, I was asking a nice voluntary person next to me, like, what's the time? What's the time? What's the time? My God. Yes. Not anymore that problem, right? It's a luxury. You can just save time and someone is pushing it for you. That's amazing.
Oh, that's an interesting story, which is new now. Okay. We know about you because of the 2018 World Barista Cup, but you started actually with the Barista Championship. So why suddenly switching to Barista Cup, not continuous on the Barista?
Well, thank you for asking, because a lot of people do ask. And it's very simple. So 2015, I won out of the blue. And my today's business partner, Mathieu, won out of blue in 16 as well. A year later, so to say. But I did compete that year too with Mathieu. And I was third. And then I told Mathieu, it's not fair to compete together and there's only one winner. I'm very competitive. So either you change, because he actually did latte art 2015. And then I was in barista. And then he joined my club. So I said, either you go back to your club or I go somewhere else. And then he says, oh, I want to stay in this club. So he wants to stay in barista. I said, okay, fair enough. I go somewhere else. So I started to compete in Brewers Cup in 2017. Yes.
Come you compromised it, not him?
Why? Because he won that year, right? In 2016, the winner decides, right? Hey, I mean,
that's fair enough.
That's fair. It's okay. He was better than me that year.
Okay.
Only that year. Just to clarify.
But after 2018, you're back to barista again. And then I think 2021, you won the barista championship. You placed number fourth in the world.
Right.
If my record is right.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Yeah. So Brewers Cup and the barista, which category makes you more fascinated?
It's a good question. I think both, each of them is very different. For me, Brewers Cup is all about doing one thing at excellence. There's no room to fail. 3 brews, 10 minutes, that's it. If you screw up something, it's done. There's no way to recover. Whereas Barista Championship is all about 15 minutes, 12 drinks. You do as well as possible everywhere you do. And even if you have a small mistake, you don't show it, you keep going. So it's a different types of nerve torturing. But everyday cafe operation, right? You have customers in front of you. You're not going to just throw away a ground coffee just because you made a mistake. You try to think, what can I do to make it tasty? So always like small decisions are made in a cafe, I think, which is quite similar to Barista Championships. So Brewers Cup, you make a mistake, it's over. So there's no like, yeah, whatever you do, I don't think you can recover. And barista, there are possibilities to recover if you keep calm. You have backups, reserves, prepared, trained. Yeah. Yeah. Does it make sense?
Okay. Does. I haven't competed in barista. I only compete in Brewers Cup. So, my experience is really still quite newbie in competition. But this year, I was thinking to back to Brewers Cup. So it's good to have you on. Yeah, we have a chat tonight and I probably have some experience from you. It's a great opportunity. But after 2021, I reckon your role has switched into a coach, maybe even earlier. So I want to ask, Which role do you enjoy more, to be a competitor or to be a coach? So from your perspective, what are the differences between these two roles in terms of the mindset and the skill set?
Right. So being a competitor, I think I spent 7 years since 2015 to, let's say, 21, so 6 years. And then since then, I call myself a coach. I do enjoy both, but I think I'm thinking totally differently. When I was competing myself, it was about the coffee I chose and myself on stage. So I would always think or move, try to move forward in anything I would do. If I compete first time and I didn't win, and then I would look for problems why I didn't win, and then I try to overcome that the next year. So it was not necessarily about winning, but always making sure that I do better than the last time and hopefully coming with a good result or better result. Whereas coaching, I think it's not about me deciding what I want. It's more about understanding what the competitor wants. For me, it's very important that the competitor has a strong mindset of this is what I want. That could be either winning, could be doing better than last time, could be getting a experience whatsoever, but it has to be strong-minded as a person. I don't think I can work with someone who comes to me and say, hey, Emmy, coach me, I want to win. Like, just like that, you know, like, yeah, but tell me more. Are you committed to train? Can you come up with a training program? Because I'm not going to tell you what to do. I'll be just here to guide. So coaching, no, it's more guiding. And also try to put whatever I have from my experience to say on the score sheet what the judges are looking for. But I think my experience as a competitor is not so up to date. You know, I'm not a competitor today, but I can bring something from what I know when I was at the peak. Judges also evolve. I mean, we see new faces, coffees evolve, competitors evolve. So I think through the time, maybe what I could bring as an ex-competitor is getting less. So I try to be also evolve myself as a person who can guide them, also learn from them. So I would love to learn something new from competitors. And then I say yes to, let's say, a coach. Because I don't think it's fun for me to also just give, you know. I don't say take, but it's more receive. I also love to receive new ideas, new things, different things, whatever. But I want to also receive them, not just, this is how we should
grow together.
Grow together, yeah. Yeah. I don't know if every coach does this. I don't know any other coach like that. So that's also why I'm not so disappointed if somebody doesn't win. As long as he or she is okay with it or learn something out of it.
Okay, so Faye, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Because you said you have been participating into the training this year in Zurich, in Miami.
Oh, yes.
Because I've seen you posted.
Yes.
Can you share with us your experience in there,
please? Can we share that now?
Go ahead.
Okay. I was mostly working with Matthew. He is a very polished, experienced competitor. But luckily, we had this really friendly foundation. We joke, you know, we make fun and, you know, teasing. So even when it's something quite serious, we manage to have fun together. And luckily, he listens to me. I find this is rare. And I also feel very lucky that he valued my opinion. So the experience in Mame was, for me, once in a lifetime. No one gets to go to Mame. Oh. And to meet Matthew, to meet Taka, all at the same time. And herself, I find this, when I was doing it, I didn't think much of it. But then looking back, I was like, oh, wow. Oh, wow. All the finalists in the world. And it was, we didn't have any hierarchy. It was completely flat. You can say what's on your mind, give your input. But in the end, the competitor has to decide what they want to say, what's their story, and what's their journey. We can only nudge a little bit from the side, sharing some different perspective, because I've never competed, but I judged.
Sure. So as a coach, do you give them advice or suggestions on the bean selections, or you don't touch that field?
When it comes to bean selections, I wouldn't tell them what to choose. I would definitely bring a score sheet and analyze together what judges are supposed to look for. And I bring a list of what we have. And then they should decide what they use.
Well, I think that is a very good introduction. Yes. This is what we are looking for. So don't forget mouthfeel, aftertaste, yeah, everything. Not just, oh, floral, much floral. And that's it. I think this is a good approach.
Yeah, I think that was also kind of my reason to create Mame. Because me being a coffee lover, there was no way to try a coffee from National Champion. I didn't know where to go. It's always like either hidden or it's almost like a membership only. At the time, I didn't know that the quantity is that small. There should be an opportunity. And also, I was frustrated the first year because I didn't understand what the best coffee can be. So it's kind of a funny journey if you don't know where you're going, but you kind of go. Of course, you can learn the hard way. But somehow the answer is in front of you. The score sheet is an answer. I mean, I see it today as a customer with a strong wish to have certain things. It's nothing more or less. I mean, yes, judges are judges, but they're also customers in a way. Guests having a strong wishes of those things filled as much as possible. Mm. And then that's one thing. And then you have your products or coffee that you make a piece with and you try to meet somewhere in the middle. I don't think it's also healthy just to choose a coffee to make judges score high, but you don't like the coffee, for example, because when you train, the only thing that pushes you further is that you like coffee. If you are not so committed to the coffee you choose, you would most likely give up because nothing forces you to compete.
I think I can give from the other side of the table, as a judge, I was trained to look for exactly what she mentioned on the score sheet. And I get the reason why I want to join is also because I want to know exactly how it tastes like when it's national champion and in the future, the world champion. And I do realize a lot of people come with passion. They tell you, this is the best coffee I found, my favorite. I really want to share with you. But then they overlook the components we are looking on the score sheet. Mm. So they go home with a crying face.
And nobody's happy, you know, because
judges not happy, competitor not happy.
And nobody happy. Why?
Not happy.
Why is it do
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I think that the link between choosing a coffee to score better on the score sheet and represent yourself, your love, needs to be well delivered. Yeah. Don't think this is my favorite coffee or don't think, oh, this is the coffee I want to showcase. There's a story, so I use it. You also need to consider if you are going to tick all the boxes on the score sheet.
So it just highlights or enhance how importance of the fully understand of the scoring sheet. So I think in competition is about the rule of the game and then how you deeply understand the rule of the game and how deeply understand the scoring sheet, you got more chance to win. So which is fair enough.
Exactly.
I think I'm right now still quite emotional. I want to showcasing the ones I like.
I know. We had a conversation before. She wants to tell her story, but I said, are you there to compete or to tell story? Do you want to win or just do one presentation and you go home? And she was like,
Well, I mean, that's exactly what I ask when someone comes to me to be coached, let's say. Whatever reason, I think it's fine. It's nothing wrong about it. But I think it's often, I also see it myself being a competitor. The beginning, it is difficult to find out why you wanted to compete. And I was very lucky because I wanted to learn how they do. That was it. It was not like I want to win or anything because I had nothing at home. No espresso machine, no grinder, nothing. So for me, it was a way to learn how to steam or extraction or anything. And it was always fascinating. I didn't have any more desire. I was not there to win. That's why I did what I wanted to say. And it was not about score sheet. I didn't understand what they were looking for. I didn't even think about it. It's not that I didn't care. It was not in my head.
So this was the first year?
That was the first year, yeah.
And the second year the same, or you evolve?
I did evolve because I felt that I had no control overview of what I'm doing in Seattle. So back in the days, it was not common to use scales, but it was like talking and counting numbers at the same time, which you think today...
Oh, for the time, how many seconds?
If you think today, it doesn't make sense.
It's shooting blind.
Yes. But then at the time, it was quite normal. So the only thing I could trust was my palette. I started to think, okay, I do the same extraction, but one is bitter, one is sour. And then I'm like, why? And I didn't like that. I didn't like that I didn't know. And I didn't like that I had to ask my roaster or someone. I didn't like that I was relying on someone. And I wanted to understand the extraction. And then because I only had one coffee for 2015.
How many kilos?
A lot of kilos. It was okay. Ethiopian natural, super nice coffee. Then 2016, when I was back in the national championships, I took two coffees.
Ah, okay.
And it was Costa Rican, mm-hmm. black honey and white honey.
Ah, but same varietals, same
varietals, neighbor farm, like same processing place, but only to feel the difference.
Okay.
Understand a bit better. And then I realized that I did swap the hoppers.
Mm-hmm. By accident?
By accident in the prep time. And then that showed me, I have to practice the prep time. So I learned the hard way. But then if I think now, sure, I didn't win. I mean, I was not there to win. It was just made to be better. Mm. And then I luckily picked those things up and tried to fix it by myself. Today, I think with the resources available, like I have my baristas competing, like, you know, first timers. They are very equipped compared with me 10 years ago.
I really have to say, she does more than she should training those baristas. But echoing back to this question, is it the reason why you're helping so many of the competitors to join the game? Because you knew from before you had nothing. You were on your own out in the field shooting blind. Because when I was in Zurich, and before, after, there were so many competitors from different countries going to her, asking for advice or just practice. Yeah. I want to know if that's the reason why you open the door to everyone.
I don't mind opening a door, and if they want something and they come up, I don't mind. I would never go anyone to ask if they want me to coach them. This I don't do. I always say to my baristas or in general, if they want something from me, they should go and get it. They should come and get it. And then I give whatever I have. But they have to come.
Hmm. Because Mame is probably, I think in Europe right now, you could see the most competitor visiting.
You think so?
I think so.
Okay.
Because most of other roaster or brand, they have one team. No one comes, no one goes.
Yeah. More competitors, more chances.
Because I think sharing is so important, especially looking at Taka and Machu at the same time. They are the opposite on the scale. But you immediately realize, oh, this is his strength. Oh, and maybe he's a bit slow on this one or too conservative. The contrast immediately show you how they are different. But that doesn't mean that one will score higher or lower. No. Yeah. But I think the contrast push you to go further. And it's there to see. If you are training on your own in the box, you don't know what you're doing. Yes, you have a routine, but when there is no contrast, it's difficult to find the true north, I think. Mm. Yeah. And I find this is really rare because I've never seen a place with so many people, so many competitors coming, going, practicing, joining.
I think it's not fun if you do alone. No, I don't know how you train.
Most people do it alone.
But it's a bit sad alone. It's sad. Because imagine if you have a god shot, like if you have an amazing cup.
Yeah.
You want, like, oh my God, it's so good. Try. Don't you want to share? Like, it's so tasty. You want to share? Or like other way around. It's so bad. I don't know what I did wrong. Like, what did I do wrong? Because I'm so over caffeinated. Tell me what's wrong. It's also like, it's a bit like, how can I say? Yeah.
I think some competitors are very protective of their routine, their idea, their coffee. They don't want anyone to know till the moment they're on stage.
But I respect that. I respect that. Yeah. But then you can't get feedback either if you don't share.
I think there's a quite real situation is most of the competitors, daytime they have to work. So mostly their training or practicing time is at night. At night, if you want people with you, who want to drink espresso at midnight, right? So you probably have to share during the daytime with them. So if you're from a big company that you're fortunate enough, you have the team to support you. You have like the guys can sharing the, you know, their experience and then borrow your their palates into judging your coffee. But most of the competitors, they practicing alone. That's truly what happens in right now.
Okay, that's interesting. Because, I mean, we are definitely small. We were just two of us, Mathieu and I, and a few baristas together. I think I was working and training at the same time. Like 2021 for Milan, my head barista, Daniele, was representing Italy and I was representing Switzerland. We were splitting our shift. So I would train in the morning. So I come whenever I can. So like starts at, I don't know, 7, 6 in the morning, because I know this is the slot I have. Then he comes in the afternoon because he's working in the morning. Mm-hmm. So I cannot train in the afternoon, so I'm working in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And then 7 p.m., always, we do a presentation.
Ah, together.
Yeah. So he does one and we give him back. Mm-hmm. And another one is at 8. But then we time it. So it's like today you are 7, me 8. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow, other way around. But then under pressure that we train and then we are done by 10. Like we should be out also at 10 because it can't go too long, you know? But then that's your life for, I don't know, a few months. Mm-hmm. But there's no compromised amount of work. It's just that we had to ask other baristas to be okay with him working in the morning most of the times because the afternoon shift is like starting at 11. Mm-hmm. So then he has to come at 5. I can come at 5. I'm an owner. I didn't want my barista to suffer from 5 o'clock in the morning. And I also lived a bit closer to the roastery. So you know, I don't think it's about small or big. It's about mindset, no? And then, of course, if your employer is bigger, yes, you can maybe take some days off or 2 weeks off. That's a luxury. But I never had that.
I do know some competitors in Europe. They work for a big company. The advantage is they get whatever machine they want, but they don't get the talents like coming to Mame. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. All the competitors. This is what's rare. Not the time, not the equipment. It's more, it's a hub. A lot of people come through. Doesn't matter if you're the first timer or the 10th timer or 20 years in competition, like someone called Taka. Yeah. So it's quite rare. I've never seen this before.
I think as an experienced in coach, can I say that? As an experienced in coach. So for advice for competitors, do you think at what stage they should consider, oh, right now I think I need a coach?
In general, I think when you want to get the coach, that's when you reached your own limit. I did everything I could think of. I want to do better. I need a different perspective.
I would like to add something here.
Okay.
Because I think some people, they don't know they've hit their wall. Uh-huh. They thought they are still good. They thought they know something. And they don't even want to listen to anyone else's opinion.
But then you shouldn't get a coach. You don't need a coach.
Yeah, exactly.
So
very simple for me. Like you said, if you're so sure about yourself, you don't need a coach. It's a waste of time and money of yours and mine too. So 2017, when I competed in Brewers Cup first time, I didn't win. I got third. And then it was very clear why I didn't win. I didn't train compulsory enough.
Mm.
And I did the overtime in open service. And then coming from barista, 4 seconds, I thought, 4 seconds. Not good for Brewers Cup. I didn't know, right? So two things that they had to fix for 2018. And then I didn't know how to improve my compulsory service. It was not this. Nowadays, all the information is there, you know, online. At that time, it was not. Okay. Nobody knew what they were doing at the compulsory service. Nobody talked about it because, let's face it, it is difficult. It is not so sexy. You know, it's not so fun to train compulsory. It's not so tasty. So I go to my mentor, Tetsu.
Ah, Tetsu-san.
Of course, everybody thinks, oh, you went him because he's a world champion. No, actually, we met each other in 2015. He was the Aeropress champion of Japan at the time. And it was also in Seattle. And he was lost in the venue. He didn't know where to enter. And then Machi phoned him and said, he must be a Japanese guy. Yemi, go help him. And then I asked him, hi, but in Japanese. And then he says, hi, what are you doing? I'm actually an Aeropress champion, but I don't know where the gate is. Like, yeah, sir, you're standing in front of it. You just have to push. Exactly. That's how we met.
Like Aeropress, just push.
And then a year later, 2016, Machi was competing in Dublin for barista. Mm-hmm. Then we go to the Brewers Cup stage. And then I see, hey, wait a second. It's the guy who got lost last year. The one, he won the Brewers Cup. My goodness. So that's how we knew him. And then because of my compulsory for 2017, after my first competition, I went to Tetsu. I said, Tetsu, I didn't do well in the compulsory. I don't know what to do. Do you have any tips? Mm-hmm. And he says, oh, I have a magic recipe.
What? Don't share.
No, it's already it's shared. It's basically his Aeropress recipe that he did that now, I mean, everybody was using later as a bypass. That's the recipe he made. And that was not a secret. He just said it. He's like, oh, yeah, I can show you how to do it. That's great. Thank you. So I saw him in Japan just like that. And he showed me how. And that's what I did for 2018 national. And then I won the nationals. And then finally, I asked Tetsu, would you be my coach? Mm. Because for my nationals, I think I reached my ceiling. It was max. I can't do more. Not because I'm good, but even if I do my max, it's not tasty enough. So I didn't know what to do. I even felt lost, you know. That's where I thought, okay, I ask help. Because I think I'm in a hole. To, you know, like that, I need a different perspective. That's where I got him.
Well, at least when you're in the hole, you know now you need help.
Yeah.
I think most of the people, they don't know it's time to call a coach or
but
find help.
I think it's very healthy to know when you need the help because you did everything you could think of. It's not so healthy when you're fit. It's like if you go to a doctor when you're sick. You're not sick, you don't need to go to the doctor. And you want to hear something else, then you ask somebody else, no? Yeah. Otherwise, you should know what you're doing. It's not like you get the coach and you win.
No, it's not that simple. A lot of people thought, oh, if I hire a world champion, I will win. It's not the case.
It's a lot of work. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know it as a competitor. I mean, then you're asking the coach to do the same on top of what the coach is actually working or doing. I mean, obviously, the coach is not as sharp as you. You shouldn't. I shouldn't be as sharp as the competitors. I'm not competing. But the knowledge, the mistakes they did in the past can help you as a competitor.
The experience, yeah.
Experience. Mm. Or even like just the thinking body, you know, when you taste a coffee that is quite complex, sometimes you don't even know if it's over-extracted or under-extracted. Mm. And of course, one way is to think, okay, let's take a TDS gadget. But it's also more like, which direction shall I go beyond this sweetness, for example? And it's nice to have another person who is also experienced, no? Yeah, it's fun.
Yes, I agree with you.
Yeah, when you want to find a coach, that's when you need fun. And you did everything you could do. Otherwise, you don't need a coach. Why do you need a coach?
That's I finally understand why so many people bring the Aeropress into compulsory.
Yeah.
Oh, that's actually from Tetsu.
All because of Tetsu-san.
But I visited him last year in the Rosary. I had a quick chat with him. And he's very humble and a dedicated guy. Open-minded.
He's too humble. He's one of a few who won the world already and still keeps pushing his boundaries.
Mm.
Like he comes to, when I see him at the show, he comes to me and say, oh, I found a new recipe for brewing. Yeah. I'm like, Tetsu, you're not competing in Brewers Cup anymore. And he says, why not? I'm like, yeah, of course, why not? But like, you know what I mean? Like, this is Tetsu. Yeah. Like he comes up with something or he finds something new or he says, oh, I don't know this. What is this? You know, it's hard to say sometimes that you don't know. It's okay, right?
Yeah, it's okay.
But he says it, oh, I didn't know this. Or, oh, I've never tried that. Yeah, then if he says that, I think everybody gives it to him and then he appreciates it.
Yeah, that's rare. That's really rare.
Anyway, thanks for the comprehensive sharing. So we need to move on. So next is about the coffees. Because in 2018, you had used the Terra coffee to be your competition lot. So before that, I reckon no one would expect that Brazilian coffee could be presented in the world competition. It's either Panama Geisha or Colombian fermentation, whatever. So would you mind sharing with us the story behind it and what makes the Terra? I think that's in Spanish term means from the earth, right? What makes the Terra so unique?
So the Terra is a farm. I think, if I'm not mistaken, this is the only farm pushing specialty coffee and having little amount of waste. So it's a huge farm, not like a 2 hectares farm, you know, it's very well managed. Mm-hmm. And 70% of the production, or even 80, is specialty. Now, this is, remarkable.
For Brazilian farms.
And they even know what they do with the other, let's say, 20% cautiously. Mm-hmm. And it's a farm that works a lot in innovation and thinking forward, like 2050, for example. They still try to have their own varietals growing happily. Mm-hmm. So they spend a lot of time studying, at the same time trying to make the business profit. Mm-hmm. So it's not just dreaming because they have a lot of money. Mm-hmm. No, they also try to cultivate coffees and keep pushing their qualities. So they deliver what they promise and they keep innovating, which is sometimes either or, no? If someone is successful, they get on that success and it's nothing wrong about it, but they just go with it, you know, and then no evolving. Or you are very innovative and you put just laws of budgets, but it's still a crop, so you have to do something about it. You cannot just take a varietal that is rare and plant and see what happens. Even the new varietals, they are often born not for the taste. They are born because of the situations at the farms or, disease, future thoughts, thinking. And then if they are tasty, everybody loves it. If they are not tasty, everybody doesn't know it. You know, it's a cruel reality, so to say. The Terra, they go in the middle. They try their rare species coming from a lab. They put it in a test phase of 10 years on the part of farms. They do 10 years. And then once they find the best balance in taste and cultivation, they release it to the market.
Oh, wow.
I don't know any other farm at this scale who does that. I've been there 3 times. Every year I go, they're a bit better than last time. So it's very fascinating. A little bit bigger in terms of quantity and quality, a little bit better organized or upgraded canteen for the workers and stuff like this. There's always something. Mm-hmm. Now they're planting so many trees to have their own resources and water. Like, you're farmers, right? You know, they keep pushing. So I love them for that. And for me and Lorena, the varietal, I think when I said I reached a kind of point that I reached my ceiling, 2018, because I thought knowledge in coffee is remembering the taste depending on the varietals and process. Mm-hmm. Say if it's a Kenyan washed, you have those dots of, you know, flavors in your head, Brazilian and semi-washed, or Ethiopian naturals, and they have those profiles. And I was a bit bored, to be honest, to keep remembering them. It's a bit like always the same. I'm sorry. No? So I lost my interest a little bit. And then I still won. It was a Catura Coco Natural from Bolivia. Okay, amazing. And then I have 6 months to go to the world. I kept cupping. Like, I think I cupped 150 cups blindly. When I choose coffees for competition, thinking of a score sheet, but I do cupping blindly. I don't know what they are. I shouldn't know. No biased. And I keep cupping. I don't find anything that excites me. You know, I need coffees to present, but I don't know what, you know. And then Matthew, at the time, got third in the world in 2018 at Amsterdam. So he got invited to the Terra. And then he told me, I remember, maybe I find your coffee. And then I had exactly the same reaction like you did. Because I'm going to Brazil, you want me to compete with the Brazilian coffee? Make me. Ha ha ha. And he goes. He goes alone because I didn't win, right? So he got invited. He had the best time. And he comes back with a couple of samples. And I said, no, you didn't bring any samples. Yes, I did. You should try it. They're amazing. I'm like, no, you're making jokes. No, I mean it. Okay, so let's do the cupping. We have some favorites from this 150 mm-hmm. coffees, my favorites. Mm-hmm. He put together, he selected 10 coffees, blind. I cup and I go twice like this out of the 10. And I see like that. Lorena, Geisha from both from doTERRA.
Ah, wow.
And then I was like, what? And then Matthew said, you see, I was not joking. I'm like, yeah. And what is Lorena? I didn't know what it is. I Googled it. It's like, yeah, it's a bourbon. Okay. And then why? I don't know. Ask them. So I did ask them, why Lorena? Mm-hmm. The coffee was amazing. And then I had asked Tetsu already to coach me. Mm-hmm. So I did the same to Tetsu. And he did the same to me. He's like, no, you're not going to compete with Brazilian coffee. You're not going to win. Let me bring some coffees. I have some coffees. Like, okay. So he came to Zurich. We did the cupping. Tell him. Again, he chooses two.
Same.
And we were both like, oh my goodness, what are they? So Lorena took my heart away. The acidity was just so complex. Back in the days, acidity was the double.
Mm, yes.
Now it's different. But at the time, acidity was double. And then for me, cupping always finishes around 30 minutes, no? I could cup the coffee for 2 hours. It was keep coming. No bitterness. No caffeine, right? And then three acidities, always. Malic, citric, and tartaric, always. Three acidities. No aroma, so that's my weakness point. But the rest was just amazing, and I didn't know the varietal. And I had this like a wrong image of, no, nobody's going to Brazil for a world championship. So I'm like, I love that coffee changed me. At that time, I thought it's a knowledge. I would throw it away immediately in my bin. Yeah. Say, no, this is not a knowledge. It's just a perception. Throw it away, I do it from the scratch. So that was in August. My championship was November.
Wow.
So that was also the first time you brought the Juno coffee brewer on the stage together with the Terra coffee. And then we saw, oh, there's a brewer, like so fancy. The recent years, since 2022, there was one brewer that was quite getting popular, was the Switch, Hario Switch. So what do you think the differences about these two vessels?
So Juno was available in 2018. Hario wasn't. Hario's Switch wasn't available. And what I wanted for my Lorena was to capture two different temperatures. Lorena, so the particular lot I had was very reactive in acidities, okay. In temperatures. Not the grain size, not the recipes, not immersion, not drip. That just temperature. Don't ask me why. Mm-hmm. I did like all the tests possible. In any grain size you can imagine. But again, low calf, you know, I can still sleep. Then it was so reactive to temperature. But temperature, you can't see. It's a presentation. So I needed something that I can do. Now it's closed. It. Now it's open. So you can see. Judges understand, no? Mm-hmm. Now I take 80 degrees, immersion, it's closed. And I pour and no water coming in. So, immersion, 80 degrees. Mm. Now it's drip. I open the valve, 95 degrees, higher temperature. Mm. You can see the liquid. Drip, 95 degrees. It's easy to transmit the message. That's the reason why I needed a device that allows me both. Of course, it is obviously coming from an immersion and drip as well. But the true reason was the temperature.
Okay, wow.
But because it's a Brewers Cup championship, it had to be visual. And when it's a visual, then of course it's nice to be beautiful, right? So I had three black Gina plus white that can just to demonstrate. So look, it's open. And then you can see. I had the water inside and now it's closed. And then you open and the water goes out.
Are you still using it in the store for daily consumption?
Yes, thanks to my experience there. I was very happy to have that combination. Immersion and drip. And that brings you a consistency among the team. Less chance to go off the recipe. So for us, it's very important to have Gina, or let's say this device, switch, Hario switch, to have this as easy as possible during the operation. We have, today we are 5 shops, 30 baristas. If I share you a recipe, it's impossible to do like I do. If it's a drip. I don't think so. I can taste who brews which coffees.
I agree with you.
And to be honest, some coffee shops celebrate that differences, and I have nothing against it. I just wanted to avoid Mame being a place where Emi or Machi have to be there all the time, because cafe is open 7 days a week. We have 5 locations. We cannot be in 5 pieces. So every single cup brewed under the roof of Mame has to be as good as by me or by you or whatever. So for that, I needed the device that allows that consistency. And then back in the days, it was only Gina, in my opinion. Today, we are actually switching from Gina to Switch, made in Taiwan. They have this beautiful black ceramic Hario switch that I gonna introduce now to Mame.
So since you've started using the Hario switch in the shop already, so would you mind to share with the audience more officially from you? Do you have any good recipe to share?
Yeah, sure. I can happily share the recipe we use at cafe. One portion of coffee will be 14 grams, 14 grams of coffee. Relatively fine ground. Mm. Total brewing water is 200 grams of water. The reason why I say the grounds are a little finer is because I would tell you to close the valve, so it's up, and then pour 50 grams of water for 30 seconds as a blooming. And then you open the valve, you stay in the center up to 200. So one pour, not 2 pours, 3 pours. Mm. And then that pour should be done around 1 minute. So by 30 seconds, you start pouring the rest of the water. By 1 minute, you're done. And you, if you want to, you can swirl a little bit to collect all the coffees on the side, because your flow is quite fast. Mm. I advise you not to go that high, but quite close with the kettle. That's it. It's quite simple. This is a starting point of the recipes if it's for coffee lovers. It's a standard recipe at Mame. Our baristas play only with the grind size. Mm. We are very busy at the weekends especially. And my baristas are always working and talking at the same time. Some people want to know where the bathroom is, Wi-Fi called, how their holiday was, their dog, grandma, whatever. And they are still, then I want to pay. Ah, okay. And then you still have to brew, smiling. So that's where we came up with this recipe. It's slightly higher in dose and slightly, we go to the finer side to get the sweetness as much as possible. Yeah, so then this is also easy to follow. So that's the recipe we normally recommend.
Would you mind to give me a rough number if someone using EK in the store, what number is going to be? In the range is fine. Or if someone using C40, what's the range going to be?
Yeah, EK would be around 7, somewhere there. Comandante would be starting with 23, 4, somewhere there.
So the total duration time, I would say?
2 minutes and 20, yeah. Because you have the fine grounds, you extract a lot.
Yeah.
But then because of that, you have the valve open. And then in a short time, you have all the extraction in the carafe. Because if you wait in a funnel, it takes longer time. And you make customers wait. I don't want my customers wait. They already wait. So we try to go as fast as we can under the same circumstance. So that's also why it's a little fine ground.
Thank you. So in 2019, you and Matt started your own roastery. So for each coffee, you choose to have specific roasting profile. So while for filter and for espresso, you roast the dives into different directions. So espresso, you might prefer as balanced with pleasant mouthfeel, while for filter, you prefer it presents vibrancy and clean up. So how does this idea come from? And because there were so many roasters that are doing omni roast, right? And what do you think the cons and pros of the omni roast?
Okay, so the decision of us roasting coffee separately, so for espresso and filter, is coming exactly from our own experience. Back in the days, we had 2 coffee shops, then we didn't roast yet. So we've served different roasters from Europe. Some are omni roast, some are separately roasted. And we saw pros and cons from everything. And then we just made up our mind of roasting separately. So something cool about Omni Roast is, yes, your operation is very smooth. And I think Omni Roast is all about capturing the point where it makes more sense of the coffee. So other way around, it's not too bitter, it's not too sweet, it's not too acidic. It's like a sweet spot of good enough. And to be honest, it's nothing wrong about it. But then, of course, because it's a kind of a convenient spot, there's surely some coffees that are not pushing the full potential of the coffee. Now, I don't think that applies to everything. And then I can definitely confirm, because today we do roast espressos and filters. There are some coffees, roast profiles look almost identical. But that's heavily depending on the coffee. So I'm not here to say, oh, those roasters do only Omni Roast, so they're only going for the mediocre quality. It's absolutely not true. We don't know what kind of coffees they choose to do Omni Roast. There are surely some roasters who do Omni Roast cautiously with the choice of the greens they have. Now, we don't choose coffees for certain types of flavors. As you can see, we have 14 different flavors. We have to go diverse. So that allows us go away from Omni Roast. It has to be true to every profile we get out of the coffees, thinking of the sweetness when it's espresso, vibrant sweetness when it's a filter. And then some coffees end up being very similar in both roasts, some are totally different. So that's the reason why we chose to be separated, and then we are very happy with the result, decision we made, because of the coffee choices we have.
So how do you select your monthly subscription?
Monthly Mame, it's purely on me to say, which coffee shall I take if I will compete this month? Purely me and Mathieu choosing those coffees that I would, we've been dreaming of drinking, let's say 10 years ago. What would the champion drink on stage? Like super rare, super, like a super special, limited quantity whatsoever. That's like super good to bring it on the stage, almost like mini championship every month for me. I did it not to satisfy everyone. I think this is the only thing that I say, I do it because I want it. And it's only for people who like this kind of things. Yes, we have some requests like, can you ground it? I say no. Can you sell this bigger quantity? Most likely not, because I don't have it. Can you roast it differently? No, because I say this coffee deserves this roast. That's why I also give you one recipe to start. It's not like you have to do this. But if you follow my recipe, you can taste the way I enjoy the coffee. But that's me deciding this coffee should be enjoyed and then shared among people who love coffee.
Okay, we're going to move on to the part three about the brand establishment. Won't be too long. So thank you for your patience by now. I really like the slogan of Mame. The best coffee is the coffee you like. So I think the slogan reminds me about the one I had in Melbourne, which is one of my favorite brands as well, is Mark Lane. And then the head roaster Toshi is also from Yay. Japan. And their slogan is, we love to make coffee for the city that people love to drink it. Why would you make this slogan to be your brand philosophy? Can I say that?
Actually, that was coming from Mathieu. He made that sentence. It's really purely to celebrate that everyone has a different things they like. And I think coffee is diverse enough to be able to provide. And we are here, baristas, to guide you to find out what you like. And I'm not here to say, oh, this is the best coffee, so you should like it. I mean, I should know what I think is the best. I keep striving for it, but doesn't mean this is the coffee that you think is the best. So, and it's okay. I think the biggest encouragement within the motto is to assist you to figure out what you like. Zurich, unlike Melbourne, a lot of people still don't know the potential of specialty coffee or even a coffee. Like a lot of people drink coffee just because. And this is a drink that you might drink every day and you don't know why you're drinking, like apart from caffeine. That's a little sad, no? It's a little bit going back to my back in the days that people eat because they eat, because they have to. And coffee, they drink because they have to stay awake. Hey, come on, like make it a little bit nicer. But then it's, of course, it's a little intimidating when you say, so what kind of coffee you like? I'm like, coffee, you know, like that's where you start, right? I mean, what do you mean by this? And then we come as baristas, hey, do you like to try something classic, you know, like coffee-like, you know, chocolatey, less fruity?
If today, Amy, you are in the bar, you are doing coffee, you're a barista, and the customer's walking randomly, he interested to know about the coffee, and but he doesn't have much concept about specialty coffee. So how would you approach him or her to start?
I think first question would be black or white, with or without milk. And then if it's with milk, then is it plant-based or not? And then the last question is, do you trust me making something nice for you? And if you're grumpy, you wouldn't argue. You just want to sit down, no? And the same thing, if it's a black, intense or mellow, do you need a blanket, like you need a hug? Mm-hmm. Or you want a punch to get out of your grumpy mode? That's two questions, black and white, black. Mellow or intense? Mellow. Okay, you trust me? Sure, sit down. That's it.
Wow. That's a nice conversation to start.
I really liked the presentation of Aga in 2018 when she played the role of coffee shop, like a first time milk drink. It's a little bit easier to trust me, you know. I totally agree. Like, I think first day, a lot of choices that we have on the shop, a lot of customers are a bit intimidated. Mm-hmm. They look like, oh no, I have to choose. It's okay. You know, we guide. You don't have to look at the menu. Just tell me what you want and then we arrange it for you. Mm. You do a little bit of this. And then at some point they can say, hey, tell me what I'm drinking actually. You have a lot of coffees. Mm. And so, yeah, it's actually from Brazil, doTERRA. It's chocolatey coffee, no acidity. Do you want to go something different today? Because you seem to be keen today, no? Mm. So, yeah, actually, yeah, bring me something different. And then the conversation goes on. And some people go further than chocolatey. Some people stay there. Mm. Some people even custom make their drink. Like, oh, milk drink, I like fruity, you know, funky. Oh, espresso, I want to have it only nutty. Mm-hmm. Filter, I can go anywhere I want. Mm-hmm. Bring me something new in filter. And that's like in the span of half a year. Wow. From I know nothing about coffee, mm-hmm. to give me a Kenyan washed. It's very juicy. Whoa. It's like a blackberry candy. I'm like, ooh, you speak like barista. But that transformation is amazing. What I really like to see from the sentence that we say, because it's not only for coffee lovers, maybe coffee lovers that they don't know yet that they are coffee lovers. They find themselves that they like coffee. And we just want to be there aside as a barista, not teach. No, this I don't like to teach customers. Customers are customers. They pay. They pay our bills. They pay our coffees. They pay the visit. There are so many coffee shops out there. They chose to come to Mame, so they should be treated like a king. Yeah, they should be treated like a king almost. Like sometimes kings have bad days. And then I know my barista sometimes they're like nye, 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 all the time. It's like, hey, kings have bad day too. Just make them a little better, you know. They're motivated to make king's day better. Yeah, you know, they kind of treat them with a bit better coffee or like, you know, hidden coffee from a shelf. Mm. And then, of course, who doesn't like that? As I think that's how you deliver.
To echo into this one, I also realize in Europe, customer service is not the priority, especially from Germanic area in Germany, in Switzerland. Coming from Asia, the both of us, it's a different level.
Our baristas are lovely, lovely guys, like girls and boys, super lovely, super nice. But in my eyes, they're delivering a normal service. But our customers love it because it's not so common.
So what does the customers like in your area?
They don't say hi. They don't smile. They look sad, stressed, gray, grumpy. Especially winter. Yeah, winter.
Oh, winter is
sad. Sad. They're sad. So the kings are having grumpy days. So we tried our baristas to kind of like, hey, you know, lighten it up a little bit. They deserve it.
I think your packaging design is quite stunning, which is quite different from the others.
Thank you.
The paper tubes with the lid and with the flavor wheel. So does it take you much time to think about the design?
So we wanted something round and cute and black because we wanted to focus on the colors of flavors. The wheel was born first. We had that wheel already when we opened the cafe. And then when we wanted to start roasting, we didn't want any of those packages because they look a bit the same. It's almost like to the point like, oh, you see a package, like, oh, it looks like the roaster of here. You know, like the same box, just different label. And then we also wanted something that is round, but also something you can reuse them. So we approached the manufacturer in Austria who makes that tubes for dry food. And then we asked them to custom make that tube. It's the 7 layers of paper, and there are membranes that it actually works as a valve. It's not like a valve free. It's air goes out, but the no air inside.
Sorry, what material is this? You just mentioned.
It's paper. It's paper, but there are like a little holes so you can't see, and then air goes out, but no in. Yeah. And our customers in Switzerland, if they want to, they come with the tube and get refilled. So you get 10% off any coffees you have. And that's like, and then also if you don't want to reuse them, but you want to keep it as a collection, which is happening actually, it's quite nice. I see some customers keeping the tube and say, look, I bought it 2 years ago. It's so cute. You can also plant the basil in the kitchen. It contains soil quite well. I have some. Yeah, so it's like I wanted something that it's in the kitchen, not bothering, but part of you. Like, you know, you go to Starbucks, you know how many cups are stolen a day? So many. But I think they like it. Starbucks knows it. It's a piece of Starbucks going everywhere they go. It's a sign of marketing. It's a part of them going back to wherever they're going. And I think I like that thought. So whenever you have a tube, it kind of goes with you. And if it's a paper bag, you just throw it away after finishing. You're not going to keep it. So I wanted something physically volumetric, which is a little difficult sometimes to ship abroad. But hey, our coffees are not cheap at all. So we treat it with care and love. And then we go to the full swing. That's how we came up with the tube. It looks like a tea tube. I don't know how many times we had discussions among the team and say, shall we go back to the bag? Because it is very difficult to ship. Like we face a lot of difficulties.
Now I know.
Yes. But I think when we do it, let's do it. We stick to it. So we stay with it.
Sure. Thank you for sharing that, because it's always make me thinking, oh, what are they thinking when they design the tubes? So I want to ask it today.
Yes.
Right. So far, you have been traveled to many countries, and then thanks to your background from Asia, and right now you're living in Zurich for 15 years. What's your perception of device coffee culture after you've been traveled to so many countries? What is your observation?
I think it is very interesting to see a cultural background and what's happening right now. So, for example, being in Europe, especially close to Italy, their cafe is espresso. If you pick an Italian, you say you would like a coffee, like cafe, it's espresso. You pick a German person, both European, a lot of them think of filter. And if you go to Asia, if you want a coffee, it's a filter per default. If you go to US and you ask for a coffee, it could be a filter, batch brew, or double ristretto. And it's very interesting to see why, no? But all the whites are already in the roasting styles, water they have, what they drink, etc. So it's actually not a quiz. It's actually quite obvious. So that's the historical background. Now, what's happening is, I think, because roasters are everywhere around the world, everything is reachable if you want to. If everything is exchangeable, people are having more diverse ideas of what the coffee can be, which is great for anyone working in the specialty coffee industry, because you can play classic or you can go modern. You can do both. Everything is possible. It used to be like, oh, this coffee would be beloved only with this kind of background of people. This information that we got when we started to roast is old. Today, I am in Shanghai having different coffees on purpose. I want to see the reactions of people because I have a perception towards Chinese community, but this is 5 years old. So I want to renew my memory.
What do you expect from the Chinese coffee market in the following years?
Yeah, I'm super excited. Mm. I think China is one of the very rare countries that can have excellent baristas, very skillful, and curious coffee lovers, so they know what they're drinking, and they can possibly create or cultivate amazing coffees within the country. And this is great because that means people can keep innovating, people can bring anything new, not forgetting what they have. But that's also a great way of thinking how to be sustainable in a specialty coffee community, no? It's not only about the earth that is going to be tired to produce tasty Arabica 2050. you need to have a reason to push the industry. And I think this is the reason why. We want to have better coffees. We want to have tasty coffees. It can be any varietals. Maybe today it's a geisha. Maybe tomorrow, what is it? Maybe Robusta?
Okay, so that's all for today. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for spa. 谢谢你.